Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Stella Blue Coffee is more than just great coffee. It's coffee with a purpose. Introducing We Brew to Rescue, a nationwide campaign using proceeds from our new ready-to-drink cans to help fund 1,000 pet adoptions this year. Every can you crack open helps a real pet find a real home. Simple as that. Made with 100% Colombian coffee, each 11-ounce can delivers smooth, drinkable energy with a boost of protein. Available in espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. Built for mornings, long days, and everything in between. Drink Stella Blue, fuel your day, and help save a pet's life. You can follow our progress in real time throughout the campaign by watching the adoption tracker on our site. Grab yours now at StellaBlueCoffee.com. Amazon and select retailers nationwide.
Welcome back to Double Play. I am Chris Clemmer, joined this week by KB.
Yes.
Welcome.
Thank you.
This is very exciting.
I am very excited.
Brought you on because I want to talk Foxcatcher, and then we want to talk about The Fighter as well.
Right.
Obviously, you have a college wrestling background. I don't know anything about college wrestling. That might surprise you based on my build, but.
Yeah, so this is. Well, this was freestyle wrestling, which is completely different.
Okay.
Okay. You want to start with Foxcatcher or...
We can.
We can... There'll probably be more to... What do you think? There'll be more to talk about Foxcatcher?
I have more questions to you about Foxcatcher. I think The Fighter is a lot more going on in that movie. Because I think the Foxcatcher... By the way, I think both these movies are good. And this is the first time ever, I think, in the show we had two movies that got multiple Oscar nominations. These are both critically acclaimed films.
Yeah, so I obviously loved both.
Okay. Yeah. Want to start with The Fighter?
Yeah.
All right, let's go with that. Usually we do chronological order anyway. And Fighter did come out first, came out in 2010. This, of course, is Christian Bale, Mark Wahlberg film. This won Bale the Oscar, also won Melissa Leo the Oscar, nominated for Best Picture, Best Director. Tells the story of two boxers in Lowell. One kind of past his prime, has a major drug addiction. And then the other one is Mickey Ward, played by Mark Wahlberg, who is kind of rising up. I love this movie. This is one of my favorite sports movies ever. I think it's just fantastic.
I loved it as a movie, maybe not even as a sports movie.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, we're on the same
page. Yeah, this is like...
I think the boxing storyline was whatever.
Yeah.
And kind of predictable, but the characters and the acting was what made this movie great, and even the comedy.
This movie, it's surprisingly funny.
Right.
There's a lot of comedy, especially with the family, like Mickey Ward's family and Lowell.
The conglomerate of like seven sisters was one of the funniest additions that
and they almost act like a Greek chorus.
How, like, they cast, I don't know where they found those women. They were perfect.
I've been to Lowell before. So
I have an idea of Lowell.
Yeah. Lowell is right on the line of New Hampshire, Massachusetts. In fact, when we went to Nashua, we drove past Lowell. It's really close to Nashua, where we were, and it's definitely like a rough town. Like there was, if you talk about the movie a little bit, like the Industrial Revolution came, has that giant mill building. It's huge there. Now they have a movie theater in there. They have a bunch of different shops there now and some residential spots. But when this movie takes place, it's the 90s and Lowell was having a really tough time.
And that's what it portrayed.
Yeah. And they do it all on location, which is great. It felt very real. It felt very authentic, even as someone who grew up near there. And you're right. The sisters are perfect. And the mom, Melissa Leo,
was
fantastic.
Great. Yeah. And I don't know Boston culture or that area's culture that well, but it seemed perfect portrayals, not just like a over-the-top stereotype, just a perfect portrayal.
Yeah, it felt pretty in the nose. At times, it was maybe a little bit too much, but then again, with these characters so embedded in Lowell and so embedded in their lives, it almost, I almost believed it. Like, I was like, all right, I can kind of look past maybe a little bit over the top. And then Christian Bale's performance. I mean, this is one of maybe the best acting performances, not sports movie performances of the century.
It is unreal. Because in the discrepancy between Mark Wahlberg, because when you're watching Mickey Ward, you're like, that's Mark Wahlberg playing Mickey Ward.
Yes.
When you're watching Dickie Eklund, you're like, that is Dickie Eklund. This guy has to exist. This has to be some has-been... junkie from Lowell. the way he is so good.
I mean, you have so many actors who can't nail the accent right. Even actors like from New England don't get it right. This guy is from England.
Well, he's Welsh, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Or yeah,
yeah. He's Welsh.
It is insane how good he did.
And
it wasn't just that; it was the mannerisms, the facial expressions,
his eyes. When he's on drugs, I don't know how
he had to have done crack.
It was fucked up. Like, his eyes were cloudy, his mind's cloudy, and then when he's sober at the end of the movie, his eyes are clear. It's so fucked up.
Everything was perfect.
It's crazy. And I was looking at the time. I'm thinking, all right. Like, Christian Bale's probably most famous for being Batman. And I'm like, when did this movie come out? This came out between Dark Knight and Dark Knight Rises. So 2 years earlier, we had just seen him in Dark Knight, and now he's playing Dickie Eklund.
I didn't realize it was 2 years. Are there stories of how he did prepare for this role? Or
He had to lose weight, obviously, just played Bruce Wayne. So he had to lose weight, and he did follow, treatment centers and try to get a better handle. I was shocked at Mark Wahlberg's preparation. He had been training for 4 years for this movie. He was, every movie he did the 4 years before this, he had a personal trainer with him to get in shape and a boxing trainer. So the boxing scenes looked real, and he insisted on never having a stunt double.
And all the boxing scenes, like him hitting the speed bag, that's all real.
It's all him.
So that's impressive.
It is.
But 4 years compared to...
Yeah, right. I mean,
right.
2 years earlier, he was playing Batman. Like, he's facing off against Heath Ledger. So, like, he must have just... obviously, he does prep work.
So,
but
for, like, the machinist, he...
Yes, he got lost. Down to, yeah, he got down, like, my weight, right, for that. Yeah.
Which is crazy. But this is, like, he did the facial, like, the craniofacial, like, that only junkies have.
Yes.
He nailed it.
The mannerisms, just the way he looked at the... And I also love how, like, when he was lying to his mom and to his brothers...
Yeah.
He did it with a way like the audience knows he's lying, but then he's also being clever enough to lie sort of believably. It was it was so many depths to his character and so many layers what he was doing. It blew my mind.
Right.
Like I said, it's one of the great performances. I think like 21st Century, like I put Castaway in that. Like, Tom Hanks in Castaway is incredible. And I put this role, this might be the best supporting actor performance the last 50 years.
And is he like lauded as such? Like, do people talk about that role in best performances of all time, or
they do? They talk about it a lot. With Bale, that's where I kind of go back and forth with Bale. So I think Bale is one of the most talented, if not the most talented actor of our generation, right? Like of this generation. You know, he's a little older than I am, but like, you know, of this bracket of his age of Gen Xers. But I feel like the last few years he hasn't really done as many things as I'd like him to do. Like, I feel like DiCaprio, every time DiCaprio's in a movie, who's probably his like the same age as him, so probably about the same kind of balance. I feel like every time DiCaprio's in a movie, it's a big blockbuster, it's a big hit, and he gets Oscar nominations no matter what. Mm-hmm. I feel like Bale sometimes can be in forgettable movies, sometimes can be in a movie. He had three movies come out last year, and all three of them, none of them were very good or very well received. And that would never have happened with DiCaprio.
So I'm no cinephile. I rarely watch movies. I'm really picky about what I watch. So this, I'm not familiar with like a lot of things about movies.
Right.
But I, yeah. So...
Yeah, and I feel like that way with Bale, like, where if you are picky, you might miss some of his movies because they're not getting a lot of critical attention. And I feel like it's a waste of his talent. Like I said, that's where I kind of go back and forth. Like Matt Damon is incredibly talented. I feel Bale is a better actor. But yet Matt Damon, I feel like, is in more, like, top-line movies. I feel like, and maybe Bale, maybe his agent's not very good. Maybe he's super selective, which what he does in a weird selective way. Maybe he only wants certain directors. I don't know. He and this director, David O. Russell, have worked on a few different things together. They followed this up with American Hustle, which is good, not great. And then they just did a movie that just came out called Amsterdam that came out last year, and that was savaged by critics. So
It was bad.
Yeah.
So
people hated it. So I don't know, but you know, I said you watch him, you watch Melissa Leo, Amy Adams is very good in this movie. That's a difficult role to play.
She was good.
Yeah.
I don't know acting enough to be like, oh, Amy Adams did phenomenally. I love the character is what I'll say.
I do think it's hard because we're supposed to like her. And then at the like kind of the last act of the movie.
She does kind of flip.
She does. And I love how Mickey Ward points it out. He's like, you sound like them.
Right.
And it's like, she does. Everyone becomes, I think if you get involved in that circle, and I like how they show that, you can't help but be pulled in this gravitational force that you become almost selfish with your love for Mickey in a weird way.
But it's crazy to me because I found myself like usually in sports movies, like feel good sports movies like this, like you're rooting for like Mickey Ward in this instance. I was rooting for Dickie the whole time. that was, he was such a good character and yes. such a good performance that I was rooting more for him, and it was more of his movie than Mickey Ward's to me.
But so that's really fair.
Do you know the actual story of these with the brothers?
I know a little bit of it.
And was it portrayed like the boxing portrayed?
From what I know, it was a little before my time. I know Mickey Ward is the guy that had these great trio fights with Arturo Gatti. And that, like, after the fight when he wins the championship, he has these, like...
That's what they said in the...
And that's subjects. What he's known, like, that's what he's known for among, like, sports
So was
fans.
It accurate that, he, you know, in the beginning, he's, like, aging, like 30, 31, and struggling.
I didn't know that part of the story. Like, when I went okay. and saw this movie in 2010, I knew Mickey Ward is the guy that fought Gotti, and I've watched a couple of them. The fights are legendary. They just beat the shit out of each other. Neither guy, we're both warriors. Neither guy would go down. I didn't know Dickie had a brother that fought Sugar Ray Leonard. I didn't know any of that when I went and saw this the first time.
And is that real? Did Dickie...
Yes.
He did fight in fact, Sugar Ray, like the knockdown?
What you see when they show the clip, that's the real fight. That's the real... fight between those two guys, and you see how he walks over Sugar Ray, and I love this movie is so intelligent. So I love how the movie begins. It starts off and you're looking at it from Dickie's point of view. They have that song going, like that blaring, he's walking around low, he's the king of low, like during the credits, and like everyone's like Dickie, and as the movie slowly rolls on, we see that it's kind of a lie. Like Dickie didn't really even knock Sugar Ray over it. Sugar Ray slipped.
I love that addition.
And like you realize that no, people don't love Dickie. People are, he's like a laughing stock of the town in some ways. And like you see kind of they're not making a movie about him being a boxer, making a movie about crack addiction.
Which I kind of didn't understand. Maybe they were just taking some leeway. But what was like, how did he not know it was about his crack addiction?
I think he wanted to believe. I think you're seeing it from his he cannot come to grips, and neither can his mom, with the fact that he's this has-been junkie. He needs to believe he's this pride of Lowell. And his mom needs to believe that, because the truth is too hard to believe. And Mickey's the only one that sees the truth, and that's why he's so sad and kind of embittered by
the scene where they're all watching it is heart-wrenching.
Devastating. And the little kid comes down the stairs. Oh.
Like that like overshadowed all of the boxing moments for me.
Oh, me too. And I think it's supposed to. I think if you walk out of a movie... you know, feeling the same way you did at the end of Rocky IV when he beats Drago, because the boxing is so great. Like, you're missing the point. The point is the journey of these brothers. And that's why I love how the end, Mickey does need Dickie. They need each other. They both need each other. And, like, you know, half of the movie, you're like, oh, fuck Dickie, kind of. Like, oh, but this guy's bringing him down. But they need each other.
That's what I kind of didn't understand about the boxing part. It's just like, Dickie goes to jail and... Mickey supposedly agrees to start training in Vegas, but doesn't. Right. And then there's like a lapse of time where they don't really tell you how much time passes and what he does in preparation. It just jumps to a montage of him dominating.
Right.
And what led up to that? Like, what did he do differently?
This they glossed over a little bit. I wish they had spent a little more time on it. So what happened was he did hurt his hand, and it was his the hand he favored more. I think he was a righty, right? So then he started using his left hand more to carry. They show him carrying a paint can. And they show him doing more stuff with his weaker hand. And then when he gets, what he was doing is building strength in his weak hand. So then when he gets, it's almost like breaking hand was like a blessing. Because now he ended up having this stronger hand that he never had before.
That's what happened in real life?
I believe so.
See, that would have been more interesting.
I know.
Yeah,
they kind of show some things about it, and they kind of show it a little bit. But that's what, I think he's building strength in that other hand. And that's kind of, and that helped him dominate. And then also... that he's getting proper training. He's getting proper guidance.
But what was the proper training?
Just getting, like, so what happened was he was
just
training
in that shitty gym.
In the shitty gym with the cop.
The cop.
Who's, that was the real guy.
And
so
he was the real,
that was
like,
the real
actual
man.
Trainer. So in real life, Mickey Ward was just training solo with a cop in Lowell.
That's my understanding.
And he made it that far?
Yes.
So I guess they did portray
But he was supposed to train with Dickie, but then Dickie was just a no-call, no-show a million times. So his training was very, like, he wasn't getting regular training. Where now he was, and he also had to work like a street crew paving the road. Where this guy came in, that taxi cab guy, was like, I'll pay you to train. If I get percentage of whatever you make, I'll believe in you. I'll invest in you.
And then they try to portray, so what was, like, in the movie, was he supposed to be actually scamming Mickey, or he's
not scamming Mickey.
No,
that was just the mother just holding on. She was making up any story she could to keep Mickey under her wing, which I love too, because it's a lot of complicated things going on. There's a lot of characters with all of different motivations, and that's why I've rewatched this movie a dozen times since it came out, and every time I watch it, I see something new. I see something I hadn't seen before, because the characters are all doing different things. It's a very, like, high level movie about, like, some low-level people at times. Mm-hmm. But, like, Dickie's a smart guy. He's just this, like, busted-up addict. But he's still, like, a bright guy who has a lot of things that are interesting about him.
It reminded me so much of, like real people in wrestling. Like, the wrestling mom trope. Okay. They nailed, like, that's how they
I don't know that trope at all.
Yeah, they're insane. Psychopaths.
Okay.
Like, hardcore wrestling mom. And then, like, the older brother who was the star, then turned, like, in wrestling and, like blue-collar combat sports. A lot of times, yeah, they get into hard drugs after their career.
It's interesting. It's funny how both these movies deal with brothers.
I was going to say, did you pick these two on purpose?
No.
Because there's a lot of similarities. A lot of similarities. Yeah.
No. I think we were just talking about it. And you're like, I definitely want to do Foxcatcher with you because I've never seen Foxcatcher before. And I really wanted to do it with you because I don't know the wrestling world. Mm-hmm. Just had Vibs on last week. We did McFarland USA and he was super helpful because I don't know cross country. It was cool. Like having, I want to have you on for this. And then I think we were just talking. We mentioned the fighter and like, we both like, oh yeah, let's talk about that.
Right.
No, but it was just funny watching these, how they both do have a lot of similarities.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I do want to talk about David O. Russell for a second. He's a director. So this is a weird, because one area where these movies have very dissimilar is the director. So David O. Russell directed this. I think David O. Russell in his peak was one of the best directors working.
What has
he did
done?
Silver Linings Playbook.
Oh, great.
He did The Fighter, and then he did American Hustle, which is pretty good. He did Three Kings back in the 90s. He had some pretty good movies, and all of a sudden it fell off the map. He made a movie called Joy with Jennifer Lawrence about the inventor of like a mop and then she's a single mom. And the movie is terrible. Sounds and then like he didn't work for a while and did Amsterdam, which just got roasted. I've never seen Amsterdam, but it looks horrible. And he kind of fell off the map with the director for Foxcatcher. We'll get into him in a second, but he hasn't worked since Foxcatcher. He hasn't made a movie in nine years. And it's frustrating because he's a great director, Bennett Miller.
Yeah, what else has he done?
Moneyball.
Oh my God.
And he did Capote.
Okay.
The only three movies he's ever directed.
Oh, really?
And he's been nominated for Best Director twice. The only movie he wasn't directed for was Moneyball, which got nominated for Best Picture. So it was like, what are we doing? Dwarf more.
That's insane.
Infuriating to me.
I respect it.
But so Bale is, I think I'm a little harsh on Bale sometimes. I get frustrated with some of the movie roles he picks. I think as time goes on, I'll appreciate him more. This is the only Oscar he's ever won was for this movie.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
And that's just because of the roles he's taking. He hasn't even been nominated enough times for my liking. Like, I think he's so talented. I guess I just hold him to such a high standard because he's, like I said, probably one of the greatest actors, obviously, of my lifetime, that I want him to get all these nominations. And I want him to be in better movies. And he's just not. Let me go through the movies he's been nominated. He's been nominated four times. Fighter. He was nominated for American Hustle, The Big Short, and Vice. He lost the last three times and obviously won for this.
Wow. Only one.
Amy Adams has been nominated six times, lost every time. She's only one other actress who's ever been nominated more and never won.
Who's that?
I forget her name now. I should know it. It's, Glenn Close.
And we have to tell, what did you think of the kissing scenes? So Amy Adams obviously has some historic
kissing scenes.
Kissing scenes. I didn't like the one in the bed as much as the first kissing scene, but I think it was pretty good. I think both performed well.
Good kissing.
Mm-hmm.
No arguments with the kissing there. I think the kissing felt on
I'll
brand.
Tell you one thing I have like an autistic aversion to, and I cannot stand it, is the punch sound effect that movies still use. It is so obnoxious and fake sounding that I hate it.
This I noticed it in this one, in the boxing scenes. I'm like, there's no way he didn't hit him hard
even
enough
when they were punching outside, like in the street. I can't take it. It's so loud and fake.
Is that because of your wrestling background?
No, I've never punched or been punched or even probably heard a punch up close.
Okay.
But I know it doesn't sound like that.
Yeah.
And I like realistic depictions, especially something like that.
Yeah.
The fact that directors still use it, you must need it. But
I guess this felt a little loud.
Can't take it.
This felt a little much.
If directors are listening, I need them to just try a regular punch sound.
I had an issue.
Don't even add it.
Talk about punch sounds. I had a little issue with Amy Adams confronting the seven sisters in the porch. Those women would have beat the shit out of her. I know that she's supposed to play a tougher girl that works at a bar and stuff. Those seven sisters, I don't think they would beat up any guy. Those women were not to be trifled with.
Who are those actresses? They must have came from the river.
Incredible. Yeah. Incredible. Yeah. I mean, that's just like Melissa Leo, like as the mom. I don't believe she's from New England. She would play.
She did.
She was really incredible. She also won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. But I felt like she was authentic. Like I felt like now the actor playing Mickey Ward's dad. He is from New England. I've seen him in a lot of Boston, like local commercials and stuff like that. And then he ended up getting roles of like Dennis Leary and Lenny Clark, some Boston projects. But yeah, Melissa Leo, she's from upstate New York. No, I'm sorry, she's from New York City. Excuse me. She went to school in upstate
New York. That's not too far off then.
To get that Boston accent down like that though,
I don't know enough about how hard that is.
I mean, you have that. Pack the car and have it, like the typical.
So yeah, so like obviously Bale nailed it despite being Europe, like British.
Crazy.
Who fucked it up in cinema?
Oh, in cinema, the worst is Kevin Costner in 13 Days. It's a movie about the Cuban Missile Crisis. It's a very good movie. I definitely recommend watching it if you haven't seen it. The crazy thing is Bruce Greenwood is playing JFK, and Bruce Greenwood nails JFK, and then Costner is trying to play like a Boston guy that JFK knew as like an advisor. And it's a great performance other than the accent. It's a great movie other than the accent, but the accent is atrocious. And Kevin Costner, halfway the movie, gives up and he becomes Kevin Costner again. He just drops the accent. It's so bad. That's the worst that I've heard.
Okay.
Do you ever watch movies do a lot of movies take place in like West Virginia that you would notice? Have you ever seen a West Virginia or Appalachia?
The only portrayal of West Virginia was Wrong Turn. No, there's been a few. But nothing about like actual West Virginia culture. So I have nothing to go off of.
Okay. All right. I don't think you have much of an accent. Like you and Nick don't really have accents.
So we're from what I would consider more of like the north, like the Rust Belt.
Okay.
Which is like, it's a mixture of a little bit Southern, but more Pittsburgh, which is distinct. If you go to Wheeling, you won't hear a Southern accent. You will hear a Pittsburgh accent.
Can you do an imitation of a Pittsburgh, like a hardcore Pittsburgh accent?
No, I can't. I can't change my voice.
They're like yins.
I try. Yeah, they say yeah, it's very. I hate it. I'll say that. Okay. It's dirty.
Yeah.
It's mucky.
I don't like the Boston accent. Like my grandmother and mom both have the thick like Boston. Yeah. My grandmother, instead of saying mine, would go Mayan.
Yeah. Like, when I see people around that, like, what? How do they say sar instead of saw?
Saw. I saw the car.
Yeah. It's like, you just doing that did. No, that
it's awful, right?
I'm glad you don't have a buff.
I have this weird like mix of like New England and
extraterrestrial.
New York, and then alien, right? Yeah. That's the third part, mix in there. Yeah, all right, so what do you give this movie 1 to 100?
I gave it an 88.
Okay, that's fair. I'm going to go 93. Love this fucking movie. Like every time I watch it, I'm like, I love this fucking movie.
Yeah, I think 88 is still in the love category for me.
That's it's very just high.
Like I'm not as interested in like a predictable boxing story as others would be. Like I'd rather have like a thriller or a drama.
Yeah, I like the boxing element because it does take some of the. I think if it's just the Dickie Eklund story, which that HBO documentary, by the way, is real. I've never seen the actual one. But they were really that's a real thing. It's a real documentary they made of him.
I did read that.
Yeah. So I've never seen that. That sounds like the saddest story ever. I guess they covered three people, one of them being Dickie Eklund, one of them being Dickie Eklund's friend who died of a drug overdose, and then one of them being, died young, excuse me. And another one was a pregnant woman who died after giving birth. So very sad stories. I think watching that documentary would be just depressing. This,
I never
the boxing, it felt a little more uplifting.
There are so many documentaries about drug addicts. How do they sign off on that?
They probably give them a lot of money and then boom.
Which is like, they know what they're doing.
They have that show on A&E, right? Intervention?
Like, yeah, that's more like try to make it a feel-good story.
Right. And then isn't there another?
But there's so many like heroin, sound, like I know Cape Cod had a heroin documentary.
Yeah.
Which is tough to watch. The New York City had one.
I guess they probably just give them money, right? They must give them
They just give them heroin.
Awesome. They must, right? Because why? Yeah. And they all do it, and they're all very open about it. They're like, oh, yeah,
I never understood how they're so open about it.
The only thing with Dickie is, though, Dickie is so, in the beginning of the movie, he's so, he's manipulating his own mind so much that he does believe he's such a star. So maybe he just told himself they're making a movie about me being
I don't think that was realistic at all.
Oh, I do.
I think they even told him to his face mid-filming that this is about
crack. But he's
crack
in denial. He's a drug addict. Addicts are in denial.
I don't think anyone is in that much denial.
I don't know. This movie's a lot about denial. Now, you can question if that much denial is believable. But, like, his mother's in major denial. His sisters are in denial. And Dickie's in major denial.
That was realistic with the mother, the maternal denial. Yeah. Yeah. In the scenes of him falling out of the...
Oh, yeah. That was very jumping funny. Out of the second story. Right.
Now, what is... Is there, like, a Cambodian population in...
I don't know. There's a big, I always pronounce the word wrong. I don't want to mispronounce it. L-A-O-S.
Lao.
Lao. There's a big Lao population in parts of Maine.
That's interesting.
But yeah, there must be. I don't know. I think there are pockets, you know, for sure. Yeah, it was interesting how much they made that like a part of the story, which was interesting. Him trying to trick these Cambodian people. Yeah, and they were fun. Just like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
MVP of the movie. I think it's pretty obvious, but.
Oh my god!
I mean, it's got to be Bale. So right? I mean, he's incredible. LVP,
I struggled
it's
with
pretty hard.
No one had a bad performance. No one was on screen enough, at least, to show the.
No, and I think all the casting was right. I think we just might be a
maybe
situation
the, the theater nerd who was like, "It's actually Belle Epoch." The New York Times said it's glorious. That reminded me of you at the theater. You were probably at the theater. It was '93. You were probably there.
I don't remember seeing Belle Epoque in Lexington, but it's funny how they mentioned Lexington. That is like a rich city.
That's what they portrayed it.
Yeah, and they nailed. I think they actually went to Lexington. It's an actual cinema in Lexington. So like, I love how they shot. That's another thing. I'm such a big fan of when they shoot things on location. Like it just makes such a big difference in being on some Hollywood soundstage where they're trying to recreate. Like, we need to see a goal. We need to see it for all.
Yeah, that should be actually a rule. Like, it should be illegal to not film the setting where it is. Because I hate finding, that was actually filmed in California.
How many times they use Vancouver for New York?
That's what I hear. Like,
all the time.
The Bronx, they use Vancouver and you can see the mountains in the back.
It's so ridiculous. All of these, especially TV shows. Like you'll find like a lot of TV shows that say they're in New York or shooting in Vancouver, but even movies will cheap out. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? And then I'm so happy because Lowell was a character in this movie. It absolutely is one of the biggest characters in this movie is Lowell. So it's like, it's so important to show the city. And I love how like driving around, it's like, oh, that's like, they show the mill in the background.
You
a couple
recognized.
Shots. Yeah. Oh yeah. And I'm not even like, I'm from like 45 minutes, 50 minutes from there. So it's not like I went there that much. I'm like, oh yeah, I know that.
But
I know.
His first fight back when he starts winning, it was in New Hampshire.
Hampton
you,
Beach.
You know that?
Oh,
is
no,
that one of the few
well.
Beaches?
It's one of the few beaches. It's kind of it's the busiest beach in New Hampshire, also kind of the trashiest. A lot of Canadian tourists like to go there because it's one of the closest beaches to the ocean for them. That
you
have,
guys
like,
have what, like 15 miles of coastline?
Something very small. Now, there is a Rye Beach that's north of that that's much nicer. That's kind of where the locals go. And then a lot of locals go to Maine, York Beach and stuff like that.
Right.
Because much of our coastline, even though we only have like 12, 15, 18 miles, it's a lot of it's rocks. So we only have very few beaches.
Yeah.
But Hampton Beach does have a thing. It's called the Hampton Beach Casino. It's not a real casino. I saw like, but it's like a concert hall. I saw Louis C.K. there. I saw, who else did I see there? I forget. Other stand-ups play there. And they also do have boxing. They had, especially back in the 90s and early 2000s, they had a lot of boxing there. So it makes complete sense. And they shot it. I don't know if they shot that at Hampton Beach because we only see the lobby of the hotel. And they don't. I think if they shot it actually at Hampton Beach, you would have seen the beach. But a lot of times what happens is you'll get tax credits if you shoot a movie entirely in the state. So I think for them to go to Massachusetts, or leave Massachusetts to go to New Hampshire, they might have lost some of those tax credits.
That was all indoors. It definitely wasn't in New Hampshire.
Right. And then there would have been a great shot of him going outside, and because the boardwalk's right there, and it's like Hampton Beach would have been like a great, like, it would have been a great shot. So the fact they didn't use that, maybe it's like, they shot that somewhere else. But yeah, absolutely, Hampton Beach was absolutely a place, and it would have been a place where a boxer kind of on the outs would have gone. It wasn't like a high profile place.
Mm-hmm.
LVP, I'll go with you. I like the Belle Epoque guy.
That
guy kind of sucked. Definitely overacting, didn't feel real to me. And all right, so we both love that movie. Mm-hmm. Next movie is Foxcatcher.
Let's face it, after a night with drinks, I don't bounce back the next day like I used to. I have to make a choice. I can either have a great night or a great next day. That is until I found ZBiotics. ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Probiotic is the world's first genetically engineered probiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's this byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for your rough next day. ZBiotics produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down. It's designed to work like your liver, but in your gut, where you need it most. Just remember to drink ZBiotics before drinking alcohol, drink responsibly, and get a good night's sleep to feel your best tomorrow. So here's what our listeners should do. Go to ZBiotics.com, that's ZBiotics.com/LCB to get 15% off your first order when you use code LCB at checkout. You can also sign up for a subscription using my code so you can stay prepared no matter the time or occasion. ZBiotics is backed with 100% money-back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/LCB and use code LCB at checkout for 15% off. Thank you to ZBiotics for sponsoring this episode.
Right.
I think a lot of people probably haven't seen Foxcatcher. I know I hadn't. It's about two brothers that are both wrestlers that are both Olympic gold medalists. And they get John DuPont, played by Steve Carell, brings them to his house to train. He's trying to have some sort of legacy. He's this very rich man, especially in the 80s. The DuPont family was very well known. Everything had DuPont on it. It was a major chemical supplier. He was at one point the richest family in America. Mm-hmm. And he brings these guys in, tries to build up like a wrestling community, and also trying to find friendship and maybe more, potentially, how you want to read the film. And ends up killing one of the brothers. DuPont kills him. And it's a tragic tale. It's a very dark story. It's a very small, quiet movie. I think it's brilliant.
It's a brilliant movie, and I think the story is one of the wildest things ever.
It's incredible.
And I'm surprised it took them that long. I didn't even, growing up as a wrestler, I didn't even know that.
I had never heard the story.
It's insane that it wasn't like worldwide news. Like, once you dig into John DuPont in this instance,
you have the richest, one of the richest people in America, shoot a gold medalist and kill him. And how, I mean, I was alive when this happened.
The things that he did leading up to that as well. It's insane.
He used his money and influence to basically control U.S. wrestling from an Olympic standpoint. That's what the movie portrayed, at least. I know you saw the documentary, so I have some questions for you about the realism here and what you think about this story.
Yeah, so the two brothers, Dave Schultz and Mark Schultz, were insane. They both won NCAA titles. They both won Olympic titles. So these brothers are phenomenal wrestlers. And this is right after the 84 Olympics, where the U.S. dominated. Like, they had 7 gold medalists.
Russia was not allowed to enter the Olympics.
Two pairs of brothers won, the Schultzes and the Banaches. But it was just the Schultzes were extremely good.
Okay.
So you have two brothers.
Yep.
The one, Dave and Mark, very different from what I've heard and what it was like portrayed. Like,
Channing Tatum plays the younger brother. Mark Ruffalo plays the older. Yeah. The older is very much a typical older brother, like very kindly, almost fatherly, because they said he didn't have much of a father figure growing up, and he kind of almost like father/older brother. Where Channing Tatum's a bit more, I say temperamental, but a bit more emotional.
He is erratic. And if you follow him on Twitter, you know he's still like that. And if you looked at his response to the movie and his erratic behavior, like he threatened to kill the director at times. He flip-flopped his opinion on the movie from great to bad to great. He had a lot of issues with, the subtle or the shades of the homosexual shades.
There was
definitely
some shades,
and you saw that
the camera would linger. So Carell would, like,
it was weird.
Carell would touch his shoulder, but the camera would focus on it though. Like, the director was definitely making a statement there.
Yeah. So let's start with, all right, so wrestling. Obviously, there's no glory or wealth in it. So even if you win an Olympic title, like nowadays, I think you get maybe $100K. But if you're just on the Olympic circuit, like, you're good enough to be an Olympian, you're not really making money.
So let me ask you about that. Especially back then. Because this was in the beginning of the movie. They show, actually, the very first thing you see is Channing Tatum goes and speaks at a school, and he gets like a $20 check for public speaking. And I personally, now, you may, this is why I'm happy you're here. Like, I'm like, that's bullshit. Like, this guy's in a gold medal. So he goes back to his shitty apartment. Like, this guy looks like broke. Beginning, like, how is that possible? You're saying, no, that's pretty real.
Yeah, that's how some of the guys, like, not maybe not Olympic gold medalists now, but the guys who are like on the cusp to being Olympians, like they're living, they're not making much.
Wow. Okay.
So, but, and especially back then, I'm thinking like the training, like they have to, they were training on their own. There's not a lot of facilities. So they, it's pretty bare bones.
And DuPont used that to manipulate these guys, especially Mark's the younger one, right? Sorry.
Right.
Right. You definitely, he used that, the fact that Mark, and in my opinion, you must have some sort of ego when you get a gold medal. You can't help it. Like you're the best in the world at your craft. And then to kind of come back to the States after having this immense glory and kind of, I say he kicks the curb, but kind of like, all right, we don't really care about you. That must be very deflating.
Right. There's a lot of the people have the chip on their shoulder, a lot of wrestlers, because they don't get the glory. Like especially like in college, like look at Penn State, like they are the best in the country. They're a powerhouse. They've won like 10 of the last 11. And but the football team will get all the glory, even if they go like what 10-7 or
yeah, they get into like the worst bowl game in the country.
And so that I'll say Ruffalo did an exceptional job, even like just nailing the little mannerisms of like an elite wrestler.
He was nominated for an Oscar.
Channing Tatum, he definitely put a lot of effort in.
I thought the wrestling scenes
weren't bad, and it's so hard to nail the technique, and they didn't look too bad.
Did it look realistic? Because I have no idea.
Pretty realistic. You could kind of tell they weren't actually elite wrestlers, but they had to practice and train a lot. So Mark Schultz, the younger brother, he was crazy. Like he would hit himself in the head repeatedly after losses because he hated losing so much.
Yeah,
and I think in a scene, Tatum like smashed his head
into a glass.
I guess was real, and he actually got an injury from that.
So
Channing Tatum actually committed to that and like hurt himself.
You'd see there were a number of scenes where he's hit himself in the head, and obviously you can fake whatever you want. I know you have sound effects, but he was hitting himself in the head. Like there was no question he was hitting himself in the head. And I was like watching. I was like, ooh, it was hard to watch.
So didn't it portrayed like this international events very accurately? Like they're in tiny gyms, no one's there. They're dismal looking, bleak looking. That's how it is.
What? Okay, I gotta ask you, like, why do this?
Good question. Because, like, I think this movie came out when I was at the end. Like, I didn't even watch it when it came out because I hated wrestling so much. I was at the end of my college career, and I was like, I'm so mentally and obviously physically done with this sport, I don't even care to watch it. So it took me, like, years later to watch it.
So your ears looked like the ears.
Yeah, they got, yeah. Eyes. So that was great prosthetics, I guess.
And we were in New Hampshire, and I asked him, like, what? I assumed, because I'm an idiot, I thought they were from attacks, like from people like pulling at your ears or what? I don't know. Like, I don't know what happens to wrestling. And you're like, no, that's not what, how do ears get like that? What happens?
It just takes one. So what happens is your ear hits off the mat or even like someone's hand. The cartilage inside breaks, and then the ear fills with blood.
Jesus. Okay.
And it's all liquid at that point. And you have to get it drained or get surgery, and then eventually it hardens up.
And you said it was horribly painful.
Horribly painful. So when I had it both times, separate occasions, it fills up, and it's a golf ball size of liquid blood, extremely tender. Like, you can't even sleep on it.
Oh, Jesus.
And then you get it drained.
Yeah.
But then it'll just come back. You get it drained. So I had to get actual surgery where they, sewed it scalpeled it, sewed it, just to get it down to this size.
So another question, I'm kind of fast in this wrestling world. I just didn't know anything about it. And so like, you're a pretty bright guy. Like, you do the New York Times crossword puzzle by yourself. You have great memory. Were you ever worried like hitting your head in the mat, like hitting your head so many times is gonna like, fuck your brain up?
Yeah, it did. And more so, not that, it was more so the cutting weight, which is horrible for your brain.
This movie.
Which was accurate. But Mark Schultz claims he did that it was actually 12 pounds over. A lot of wrestlers, it's like a badge of honor to say I cut this much weight in a night.
Can you explain like cutting weight? Because I wouldn't have known what that meant really until I talked to you.
So in order to be at your peak performance, for most people who aren't like naturally gifted genetic anomalies, you have to probably cut a little bit of weight. So you're bigger and stronger than your opponents, especially on the international level. You get a weigh in the day before, so you have a lot of time to refuel and put on that extra weight,
which is what happened here.
So after a certain point, you can, I mean, dieting only does so much. You have to cut out all the water, and that's from, that's, you just got to sweat it out.
And that's what he did.
In his case, he started with throwing up, which guys will do. That'll get like a pound off.
Okay.
And then it's all, you just got to sweat it off. You put on layers and layers and the sauna suits, the plastics, and you just sweat it off.
And you can lose 12 pounds. And like he said, it was
bigger guys can. I've heard stories of like 12 in a day, even like lighter weights. I've seen, like for me, I think the most I've done was probably 12 in a week or 5 days. And for lightweights, it's tough. So I started at 133 my freshman year of college, and I was still going through puberty. So I was like, I got this, no problem. I wrestled 130 in high school.
That's less than I weigh. I'm 6'2", though.
But. So, but at, yeah, crazy. So like as the season approached, I was still growing. And I was, and then the first tournament came, and I was, it was just not coming off. And it was, to this day, the worst experience of my life, making weight for the Michigan State Open, my first time making 133. Then I had to do it again in a couple weeks, and the second worst experience of my life. So then I had to go up to 141, then
okay,
right, eventually 149. So,
were you happy when you got to go up to a different bar? Were you just like, because the fighters are obviously better, so you're probably like, fuck.
Yeah, I remember I was the 133 pounder my sophomore year, my true or redshirt freshman year. And I tried it for the first half of the season. And then I remember over Christmas break, we didn't get to go home because we had dual matches. And I remember eating like one granola bar and a lemon per day. And then like after the match, I just gave up. I said, I can't do it anymore. And it was, then I just like binge ate.
It must have been so hard to rest. So happy. If you're only having granola bar and a lemon, right, I would be so tired.
Yeah, some guys are good if you have a good enough technique, but I was more of a physical, like I relied on strength and brute force and that. So I was dead by the second period, like 2 minutes in.
Wow. Okay.
But to the movie.
Sure.
John DuPont, do you know about his like backstory?
I read a little bit after the movie. I know very little about him.
So he's like the chemical tycoon, mm-hmm, or whatever. But he was obsessed with being an Olympian. So before he even got into wrestling, he set out to try to be a pentathlete, I guess.
Right.
Because that they said that he was told like that's his best shot because he knows how to shoot guns. So he like built a facility for himself to train.
Okay.
With like people like shooting and swimming and he like built a mosaic of himself, like he commissioned it. So he's a psychopath.
Yes.
And he got like last in the Olympic trial. Then he switched. So then he became obsessed. He was like, I can't be an Olympian myself. Then he became obsessed with coaching Olympians. And that's when the wrestling started.
So I'm very light defense, but I'm going to defend DuPont for a second here. And just, it's easy for us to be like, all right, like that's so, it's what a silly thing he's trying to do. But you have to imagine growing underneath this giant shadow of being under this family that has basically unlimited wealth, mm-hmm, but you had really nothing to do with that. You just were born with this. You must want so hard, when everyone around you has a legacy, you must want so badly to have yours.
Oh, his psychological issues are completely understood.
You can, yeah.
But that is like he commissioned a mosaic of himself, right, and then he thought he could be an Olympian.
Yeah,
he was obsessed with it.
So I want to talk about Steve Carell's performance because
oh my god,
incredible! And you know, you think Steve Carell from The Office, like I do, I'm sure, and like 40-year-old virgin, like, oh, this guy, he is not funny here. Like he is playing this.
Not only did he nail a role that wasn't comedic, he was haunting.
Terrifying.
In every scene, almost.
Like when he walked into a room, like my heart would sink.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no. Because I didn't know the story. So I knew that someone would get killed and stuff. So I'm like, is this going to happen here? I don't trust this guy. He gives you the EBGs.
Oh,
like,
every scene.
Every scene. Like,
trying to think of like the one of the worst ones.
And meanwhile, Steve Carell is one of the friendliest actors on screen. Like, think about
most
The Office.
Of his roles.
Like, you like Michael Scott.
He's friendly or just silly.
Yeah, and like Michael Scott's kind of an asshole, but you like him so much because Steve Carell's so likable. Here is the complete opposite. You're like, this guy is bad news.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to be around him. And it just an amazing performance.
It was comparable to like Bale and Wahlberg, I think Tatum and Carell. It was like a very...
And like, Ruffalo, too, here.
Ruffalo is great.
You want to add Melissa Leo for the mom. You have, you know, two trios of amazing performances in these movies. I have a question with Mark Ruffalo. Mark Ruffalo was a little older than his character was supposed to be in real life. I also didn't feel... I feel like he did a good job with the physicality, but I felt Channing Tatum's physicality was more believable as a wrestler. I don't know if you felt that way, or you were all on board with both of them.
They both did it probably as good as they could.
Okay.
I guess, I mean, because Tatum was more built.
Right.
But I think they both did well.
Okay. Yeah. So maybe, I know you saw the documentary, so maybe like let us know like a little bit like how, like what were the differences between like, or what did you find that was most important in the documentary that the movie nailed, or like vice versa or something?
Let's see. How did it start? So I think there was some of it that was wrong. Like,
but so, timeline's wrong at the end. That kind of bothered me.
The timeline was at the end. It was weird. It just skipped over what happened, like Carell or DuPont's descent to madness with like schizophrenia, which I think was an important plot point to what led up to him actually firing the gun.
The movie leads you to believe that it's basically, I say jealousy, but there's a lot of mixed emotions of why he shot the older brother, Dave. But that's not like it made you think the Channing Tatum's character was more involved with the shooting. But Channing Tatum's character had been gone for 5-6 years. So,
their stint at Foxcatcher didn't actually overlap.
Oh, okay. In the movie, it does.
Originally, DuPont recruited, he wanted Dave to come train. So Mark is more decorated as a wrestler, which is weird because it portrays Dave as being like the much better older brother.
Correct.
So I think Dave was a better technically at wrestling, but you know, Mark had 3 NCAA titles and a gold and an Olympic gold. Dave only had 1.
I think Dave,
NCAA title.
Mark may have won more at the Worlds too. I saw that Mark had won more at Worlds than anybody else.
Worlds, yeah. And then. So Mark eventually was the first one to go to Foxcatcher, but he actually, in real life, he was just a coach at Villanova. So DuPont completely funded Villanova's team. They only lasted a couple years. So that's what he was doing. So Mark was coaching at Villanova and then driving over to Foxcatcher to train.
Okay.
And then Mark left and went to coach at BYU before Dave went to Foxcatcher.
Okay.
So they didn't overlap.
Did some of these discrepancies bother you when you're watching? Because you've seen the documentary. I don't know what you saw first. But
I don't remember the documentary.
Okay.
I forget what was different.
So it wasn't bothering. You didn't really.
No. I think they did a great job at depicting it.
It was incredible. I also love, once again, like how it was shot and just the different location. I love how, just like McFarland last week, like, it brought me to a world I didn't know. I don't know the wrestling world. I don't know anything about it. And I was entranced the entire time. I was captivated. And I'm like, I couldn't wait to talk to you about it because I have so many, like, wrestling questions now. Like, it's this whole world I didn't really know much about. And I was like, it brought me in. And that's a credit to Bennett Miller and this great script and the great performances, because, like, I'm like, all right, I want more. Like, I would watch more wrestling movies if they made them. Or, like, I know that not everyone's going to have this amazing kind of bizarre story, but I'd watch a story about two wrestlers if it was well done.
Right. I think you could get deeper into the actual wrestling world and like for instance, like the cutting weight, the cycle, like a lot of like the sacrifices that they make. I think that would be interesting. Like The Fighter, I think this was more of Steve Carell's show. It wasn't as much as like a sports movie. It was.
And Channing Tatum, I think.
It was both of them, but it was like Carell's performance.
Yes. It's funny how these movies are similar but very different. So, like, The Fighter, you have a lot of stuff going on. It's a very busy movie. There's people constantly talking over each other. It's just a lot going on because it's chaotic. It's just wild. Here, this is a very quiet, understated movie. There's very little dialogue for a movie like this. It's funny how those two movies have such different, I don't know, different feelings to them, but then do hit on some of the same topics, like the younger brother wanting to live up to the older brother and then obviously different things happen with, you know, a crazy billionaire and then, you know, a drug addicted brother. But
favorite scenes. Oh, Carell was so good at playing not just like a creepy guy, but like he was so good at being awkward and weird. When he tried to like actually coach wrestling, it was so
when the mother wheels cringe. In,
she was watching in disgust. Who is that actress?
It's Vanessa Redgrave, who's a great actress. Yeah.
That was so perfect.
She did a great job.
Pathetically trying to like coach while the wrestlers all looked and like pretended to like listen. And
even she didn't believe it for a second. She's like, what the fuck is he doing?
This is pathetic.
Yes.
This is such a disgusting, stupid sport.
Well, she had the great quote of like, she's like, oh, why don't you get into horse racing? Because that's a high sport. But wrestling is a low sport. We don't want to go low.
Yeah, which is true.
What sport's high? Is baseball a high sport?
Yes.
Wrestling
is the lowest.
Is the lowest?
Oh, yeah. I'm not even going to try to defend wrestlers. A lot of them are scumbags.
It's funny how it seems like the wrestling circle, though, is pretty tight. Like, we were talking to Hampshire and you mentioned, oh, there's a wrestler here. Like, you seem to, like, I bet the wrestling, oh, it seems like the wrestling circle is pretty
it's
small.
It's so tight-knit.
Yeah. Because there's so few.
Yeah, we know everything, yeah.
Do you regret wrestling?
No, I think it was the hardest thing I will have ever done. And that's valuable.
Yeah.
Like committing, like everything else, it's like kind of, in a way, you would seem kind of corny. Like, oh, once you've wrestled, everything else in life is easy. Because there's harder, there's harder things, but mentally, college wrestling, I would say, is like the hardest thing I've done ever. And it makes everything else, like now when I try to like get off booze or like even like maybe stick to a diet, it's just a simple diet of like low carbs or like lift weights. It's so easy. Like I get to do it on my own pace. Like everything else does seem easy in that sense. Like when you're like as far as like pursuing a goal.
Yeah.
Like it's so helpful in that sense.
Would you ever want to wrestle again?
No.
No, all right,
no, it sucks. That, yeah. There's no fun to it.
Movie 1 to 100.
89.
That's solid. I'm going to go 83. I really like this movie a lot. It's brilliant. I know it's a smaller movie.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean,
I had some issues with it as well. Like,
what were your issues?
Like the one, like it didn't show, like it just leaped to like from 88 to 96. And then it just kind of him just shooting him without like, getting into that.
By that point, I'm so invested in these characters and I care so much about them. I understand you can only tell a 2-hour story. I understand you're going to lump a bunch of stuff in. But I wanted to see so much more. I want to see DuPont in court. I want to see DuPont's descent to madness. I want to see more of this guy, even though he creeps me out and is weird. I want to see... I was so intrigued by these characters. I wanted more, which I guess is a sign of a good movie, but
I think it would be much lower if I did. I liked the wrestling part. I liked watching like the competition scenes, even though I don't think I would give a shit if I didn't know wrestling.
Oh, I don't know wrestling at all. And I gave many shits.
Okay.
I really like this movie.
I just love Carell's performance. I'm trying to think of my favorite scenes. The cocaine scene in the helicopter.
What did he say? And the speech that he writes.
The fact that he wrote the speech for himself.
He's like a father to me. It's so bizarre.
Then he wrote like the documentary about himself. They made Dave Schultz.
Great
like
great scene. That's what I mean by it's a quiet movie. Because it's just about small words. Like, what is it? I can't even say it.
It's like the love of
stamps.
Stamp
collector. Yeah.
He's like, you say I'm a philatelist.
Yeah.
Philatelist.
Can I just say you like stamps?
Come on.
No.
Come on. It's just cocaine.
Yeah.
No one has ever said it's just cocaine.
It's just cocaine. And then the other, right, with Ruffalo, he's there. And what does he tell me? He's a mentor to me. And he doesn't want to say he's a mentor to me because he's not a mentor. Mm. But eventually he does wear him down where he sells his soul and says mentor. And it's a great, see someone selling their soul in real time.
Yes.
It's wild.
And then DuPont. This actually happened. He entered a U.S. Masters wrestling tournament. This is for like 55
plus.
And they paid the guy
and it's
to
very
let
quick.
Him win. And he flaunted his victory and his medal or whatever. That actually happened.
That's incredible. And I love the way Miller shot this. So they're wrestling. You can kind of see the guy he's fighting doesn't really give a shit. You can kind of see his weird look on his face. And then it's very quick. The camera pans and you see Carell's advisor give the guy money very quickly, and then it shoots back over, and it's like, holy fuck. It's just brilliantly done. Bennett Miller is a genius. Moneyball, I'm sure most people here have seen.
Yeah.
If you think Moneyball is a good movie, gotta check out Foxcatcher. It's fantastic. And I don't know any about wrestling. I don't know a damn thing about it. And I loved this movie. This was very good. So yeah, 80. Oh, MVP Carell, right? Or do you have somebody different?
Oh, it's absolutely Carell.
You make a case for Tatum? I gotta go Carell. I mean, Carell's performance here was one of the true villains of the last decade plus, right? In movies.
Yeah. I mean, I don't watch as many movies as most people, but like Bale and Carell, I was blown away.
Oh, so.
And I don't even like. I'm not good at detecting like good or great acting, but I know that was phenomenal acting.
You could probably detect bad acting. And both those right. characters in a different actor could have gone haywire real easily. Someone could have been a cartoonish drug addict. Someone could have been like goofy and awkward. You felt fear when you saw DuPont walk in a room.
Yeah. And so Mark Schultz in real life, he wrote his own memoir, which I don't even know if I would trust. I'd definitely be interested in reading it because he is, he claims there was some differences. Like he claims that like DuPont didn't introduce me to cocaine. I introduced it to him. Or something like that.
Okay. I know that he went back and forth with the movie because he said at first he loved the movie because he was a consultant on it.
Well, here's what I think happened. Once critics start mentioning like the homosexual undertones between him and DuPont, like that's when he like flipped out. And
yeah.
He was like, wait.
Which, if that didn't happen, you wonder
right,
why
I would
Bennett
be
Miller
upset.
Did
yeah.
that. Like, it's not even about him. It's about more Carell's. It's about DuPont. They were saying DuPont was gay. It had nothing to do at all with Tatum's
yeah.
character.
So I guess Schultz claims that he never struck me as gay in real life. Just weird.
And that's fine. I don't know if that would make me flip out, but that's a fair counterpoint. Like, I'm not really telling my story properly. But then to have him then immediately say that he loved the movie and he was wrong. I almost wonder if the studio paid him off or something happened. It's such a weird 180 on
it. But also, I think DuPont was always high and drunk and or drunk. So he was like that, which could have played into his descent.
To it, yeah. And so MVP, we both see correct. LVP, it's hard to find
they
one.
Had none, no, there was no bad performances.
I guess my LVP would be the screenplay at the very end, Jumping in Time. That really, I know that's not really a player, but that was
an 8-year difference. They didn't even show the passage of time in any way.
No, all we knew was a winter. It was snow, like there's snow on the ground. I mean, do you feel like it was like two months later?
You would think it was right after the 88 Olympics.
So when I watched the movie the first time, it's immediately thought. So then I went and did some, I was looking it up. I'm like, wait a second, none of this makes sense.
And also,
it felt so rushed.
I guess Mark Schultz in the 88 Olympics threw his match on purpose because he didn't want DuPont to have like an Olympic gold medalist under his coaching.
They did not show that well. They just show him getting throttled around, but they didn't show at all that it was intentional. At least I didn't pick that up when I watched the movie.
Unless that's just what Mark Schultz claims, but that's what his Wikipedia page says.
I also,
which I think he edited
and
himself.
Didn't probably.
His Wikipedia.
Didn't he get blown out though? Like, would he have gotten blown out that bad, or was that not
14-0? Yeah, it's like a.
Does that ever happen in wrestling or not? Not all, like an Olympic stage.
I think a tech fall is 10-0, so he had to get. Yeah, I have to look into that.
Like, that seemed, I wish they had made that clear, because I think that's an interesting plot point. Like, oh, wow, this guy hated this guy that much? Like, holy shit. So, I guess that's my thing, is I felt like the third act, especially the last 25 minutes, were really rushed. And I wish we had gotten an extra half hour to flesh it out.
It was too open-ended about why he killed him.
Very much so.
But I guess it's like, some people like that, I guess. I don't know.
I don't mind open-ended. I just want more clarity around that time and that scenario. Fantastic movie, though. I'll be back next week. I'll be covering the movies The Ringer and...
What happens when you lock 18 coworkers in an office for 1 week to compete for $250,000 of cash? This is Surviving Barstool Season 5, presented by Rumble Premium. Each episode released 3 hours early, so get it ad-free before anyone else, only when you join Rumble Premium. Surviving Barstool premieres Sunday, August 9th at 5 p.m. on Rumble Premium. And everywhere else at 8 p.m.
Oh, and The Miracle. Ringer and Miracle with another guest. I will see you folks next week.
Stella Blue Coffee's new canned lattes are here. Crafted with 100% Colombian coffee, each can is a good source of protein and comes in two smooth flavors, espresso cafe mocha and espresso sweet cream. And whether you're braving your morning commute or chasing your pup, Stella Blue cans are for those always on the go and for those who care. Stella Blue is more than just great coffee. It's about giving back. I named the brand after my rescue dog, Stella, who inspired our mission to help more dogs find their forever homes. Every purchase supports animal rescue organizations. So when you drink Stella Blue, you're not just fueling your day, you're saving a dog's life. Try the new cans today, taste the difference, and make a difference. all new Stella Blue coffee canned lattes now available at stellabluecoffee.com or subscribe on Amazon for 10% off.
All right, thanks for having me.